thank the organizer for inviting me. You know, the problem is that everything is changing. It's changing fast. In the last 2 weeks, actually, we just posted this paper on the web. And there is actually a shift of a paradigm I am experiencing because of these two guys that are working with me now. So all the work was done by myself for many years. And, you know, I didn't want to involve these young people because I don't want to spoil their career with foundations, you know. Maybe it's harder to get a job if you work in foundations. But it's not true. Now we have the perimeter, right? So this guy, I think, is supposed to come here at the beginning, I'm sorry, the end of this year. So we are changing our mind because of a discussion with Giulio Chiribella and Paolo Perinotti. And I am still affectionate to the original point of view. And so you will see in this talk, there will be this history. There will be this change of paradigm. There will be some old ideas and some new ideas. And I tried to have to put everything in a new framework, but I couldn't. So you will suffer with me this shift. It's pretty painful because the original point of view was strongly Copenhagen. And now we are moving toward a more maybe practical point of view with a skin which is very close to Lucien Harding in some way and to Bob Cook in another way, more about circuit, diagrammatic. There is a new language coming out, which is a purely diagrammatic, by which you can prove theorems without mathematics, which Bob says is not without mathematics. You are using category theory. That's true. This is equivalent to monoidal category. But we are not using category. We want to use just the normal language. I'm saying not the category is not abnormal or subnormal. It's supposed to be pretty technical, right? So, and OK, let me start from the end of the story. So I will make you curious. So I'm now, after, I'm saying, really in the last 2 days, I think that I really got convinced that these are the principles, these are possible principles. There are other principles. These are not the only possible, not the only principle of quantumness. There may be other equivalents. But this is a complete set of principles. Quantum mechanics is a probabilistic theory that satisfies causality. We will see what I mean by that. Local observability, we already have this concept in this conference. And the conservation of information, let me say in a very shortly, this is purification. And so this is the outline of the talk. I will present first a short lecture on these causal theories with local discriminability. Then I want to review these old postulates. But now these postulates are completely superseded by the new one. The existence of a pure, faithful, preparationally faithful state, the existence of a faithful effect, and a super faithful state. The new postulate, the ultimate one, purification, which will imply all this and many other things together. Actually, I was wondering about this postulate since many years, but I was never able to really get something concrete coming up. It's extremely powerful. If you really seriously work on it, you get a lot of stuff. And then if we have some time, I will very shortly discuss how can we prove that the theory is quantum, because this is not an easy task. You can have quantum mechanics in your hand, but you have to prove that it's quantum mechanics. So let's start with these test theories. So we are not dummies, but so I want to deliver the lecture with this style. So what is a test? This is exactly the same as in Alex Will's talk. It's a collection of outcomes, a complete collection of outcomes. Outcomes can happen with some probability. And you can have sets of outcomes that are events. The same outcome or the same event can occur in different tests, like this square can occur in the blue test or in the green test, and the circle can occur in the yellow or in the green. There are deterministic tests that have a single outcome. With events, you can make coarse graining. You take the union of events. And so you, from one test with three outcomes, you can get another test with two outcomes. And you have the refinement, which goes in the reverse way. So these are the tests. Now, paradigm shift. We represent tests just as boxes, like Lucian, with wires. The wires have a label. The label is the system. This I didn't like at the beginning, because it's a very objective system. But we can recover the Copenhagen point of view, I will tell you. But it's much more practical to have an objective one. So what does it mean that you have a label on the wire? That you can connect wire only with the same label. So you can connect A with A, B with B, C with C. You cannot connect A with B. So this will be called input. The left is input. The right is the output. We can represent tests and events with boxes in the same way. What is a state? This is the old paradigm. Because originally everything was probabilistic. Now we are shifting to something which maybe is a little bit more general. The state is a probability rule for all possible events in any possible test. We normalize the states with all possible outcomes in a test. And clearly, since a state is a probability rule, you get convexity. So the set of possible states will be a convex set. And we will denote the convex set by this German sigma. It's not Greek or that. Which kind of letter is that? I don't know what is the name of this font. German, let's say. German, sigma. Or S. Eh? Yeah, but what does it mean, that? So, that's part of the paradigm shift. We can regard more abstractly a state as a test itself, as a preparation event of a test. And this will be a test which changes the system from the trivial system. What is a trivial system? You know, I can define it axiomatically. Let's say the trivial system you can imagine as classical information, as nothing, as the human prepares the apparatus, whatever. From the trivial system, just take it as a rule now, to the system of which you say this is the state of. And so the trivial system will be not drawn as in Lucian Hardy. We will put a different round wall for the input to say that we start from the trivial system. Now, we actually have a test, so it will be a collection of states, and they will occur with some probability. So it's actually more precisely an ensemble of states, and these states will be not normalized, but they will be normalized to the probability of occurrence, so, because this is an ensemble of states. It's much more convenient to keep states not normalized, actually. This is another thing I have to change everywhere. To work with states that are not normalized, it's a big mess. So this is actually was the driving concept of all my previous work. And I wanted to define this abstractly at the beginning, the notion of time cascade. Abstractly, we are running two tests jointly. The new paradigm, we connect the input with the output, that's all, finish. Old paradigm was, no, we are running the test jointly in a very special way that we define everything with probabilities because we want to be operational. And so the joint probability, if you take the marginal over the first of the test, let's say this is the first and this is the second, then this will be independent on the choice of the second test. So we say that there is no signaling from the future in the sense that the outcome here will be independent of what you do later. This is a very special asymmetry of the joint probability and defines the time cascade. Let me say there are different kinds of cascades, like this one. This is a cascade of two tests, but this will not obey the signaling from the future. The marginal probability here will depend on the choice of the other and vice versa. But if you have no signaling from the future, then when you join the events, you will say that you compose the events, the special kind of joining the events. And you have the notion of conditional state coming out. You are setting the arrow of time here, right? You can say also that there is the inverse arrow of time. You can say that the marginal will be independent on this instead of that. You are setting the arrow of time here. And once you set the arrow of time, you can make conditional from the past, which is your knowledge. And then you have conditional probabilities. So this is actually something that you need to do when you define conditional probabilities. You don't need in quantum mechanics. And the probability rule corresponding to conditional probability will define the conditional state. And now that you have conditioning, you can identify logically events with transformations. Because the transformation, the evolution is the conditioning. And the evolution is the conditioning in the following sense, that the event will evolve the state to the new joint probability rule with the event A and the variable event B. So no signaling from the future, arrow of time, evolution as conditioning, and this is linear. You can immediately see it's linear. So linearity is just the probabilistic stuff. And it keeps inside this evolution as conditioning and the arrow of time. Now, sure.
So you said you can immediately see it's linear.
Yeah, actually, you are right. You cannot immediately see it. We see it. No, because there are two linearities, linearity in omega and linearity in A.
Linearity is an assumption.
No, because you have to define what is linearity in omega. Where you take the convex combination of omega, and the action will be the action over the convex combination of the action. So it's linear on omega. But it's also linear on A, and this I will tell you later. It comes just from the coarse graining. Yeah. Yes. But actually, if you think this is a probability rule, it's linear. Anyway,
but you yeah. Think you're using the linearity evolution? Are they
connected? No, what I'm saying is that the action of the event over the state is linear. Is linear in the sense that if I take the sum of two events, I will get the sum of the two transformations, and this I will tell you. And also that if I take the sum of two states, I can sum states because I start from the convex combination to define the sum. I have a convex cone. Then I take the sum of the two transformed states. This is what you have in any probabilistic theory. Let's go. I will tell you more about that. Now this is the old point of view. I want to define a system in not in using an objective stuff. I want to be totally Copenhagen. Bohr would say that electron does not exist, that there is only a set of machines by which you can see the electron, and there is no real yellow ball, which is the electron, right? And so originally I want to say, what is a system? It's just a collection of tests. But I have to define a closure of this collection of tests. I say it's closed under coarse graining, under conditioning, under cascading, under convex combination. Cascading is the fact that you are connecting different tests which have the same input and output. But this notion actually is not very convenient because you have tests that connect different systems, that transform one system to another system. So you have to keep both ideas. And that's why it's much easier to take just the system as a label. Hmm? So if you want, is an equivalence class of tests. Can be all tests having the same input system, but then it becomes, you know, a logical loophole. So I think that, you know, you want to take this, take it. Otherwise, just the system is the label of the wire. It's perfect. Now, that's another old thing, independent systems. We say that two systems are independent. This is dynamical independence. And immediately, this gives no signaling, the usual no signaling, if you can perform local tests. So independence is synonymous of possibility of performing local tests. Means what? That the tests are local. If you perform first on system one and then on system two, you get the same if you perform this in the reverse way. This is what Bob Cook is drawing with this. Yes, the bifurcation reality. Yes.
It's like the identity sort of situation.
Yes.
And you really need this huge spectrum.
Yeah, actually the time here is just a simple way of saying things, actually.
Yeah.
You know, just a colloquial. Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah, sure. It's just, you know, for intuition, it's not.
Yeah.
And then you can define a multipartite system if you want to define it as a collection of tests. You say you put together all possible local tests that are just the Cartesian product of the single system test. And then you put other tests which are not local. Or you can say that there are boxes with which have two wires instead of one wire, and you can connect the wire with the same label. Okay, now, that's another thing which comes from the old framework, but this I like. Transformation or events, they are synonymous because of the arrow of time, of the no signaling from the future. They have two complementary features. One is that they produce an output state, no, the conditioning, and the other one is that they occur with some probability. So you can have transformation that gives the same output state, the same conditional state, for all possible input states, and we say they are conditioning equivalent, or they can occur with the same probability for all possible states, but they may give different conditional states. So these are two different characteristics of a transformation. So they are two complementary equivalence class, conditioning and probabilistic. And actually, if you write down the probability rule, the joint probability is given by the conditional probability multiplied by the probability of the node outcome, right? So these, the action of the event over the state, transformation produced by the event on the state, is just the product of the two. So the transformation is completely specified either by the two equivalence classes or by, if you want, equivalently, by its action over all possible states. Now, what is an effect? An effect is an equivalence class of all possible transformations occurring with the same, probability for all possible states. And so immediately you can see that you have a duality between states and transformation because these are, a priori, in principle, all possible positive linear functionals bounded by one, because the probability are bounded by one, over states. So now by duality you can move the action of transformations of events over states over effects by duality. So you have the Heisenberg picture versus the Schrodinger picture. And they make a convex set, obviously, because you have this probabilistic meaning, and with the note this convex set by this German E. More abstractly, forgetting the probabilistic framework, we can say that they are special kind of tests that go from the system to the trivial system, to the null system. And so here we will put a round side for the test. So these are the effects. Now, we will conveniently use this diagrammatic notation. This is the most powerful because we were discussing this a lot in these days. It goes in two dimensions. So it's a new language with, it doesn't flow only on the line, but also flows vertically. And we can use also formulas instead. It is then convenient to introduce a Dirac kind of notation. And in order not to confuse with the usual vectors in Hilbert space, we put a round cap instead of a pointed one. So states with a node by the cap and effects by the bra, these are the dual spaces, and the pairing is the probability. So this is a probability. This is actually the joint probability, not the conditional one, of having the state rho I from the ensemble, transformation Cj, Cj, and then the effect k. Unfortunately, historically, we use the ket most of the time for the states. So we get the reverse order here. So this is actually the Schrödinger picture starting from the state and going to the effect. And this is the Heisenberg picture, if you want, if you read in this way, starting from the effect and going to the state. Now, I think that the concept that Lucien Hardy gave yesterday is very, very powerful, this foliation, this synchronous set. You can take a circuit with all these boxes connected and divide the circuit into two parts by a synchronous set. And you say the left is the state and the right is the effect. Just that, without even giving a probabilistic meaning. But you can take a circuit and cut the circuit with, in a way which is not, in this case, was up and down. In my case, it's left and right. So I'm not using the arrow of time coming from this no signaling from the future. I'm considering, if I connect two circuits in this way, two tests, this can be any collection of tests, and this can be any other collection of tests. I can see this is a functional over this, and this is a function over this. These are dual each other. So I can define more abstractly this as a state and this as an effect. But here we don't have the signaling from the future. And let me say that the theory defined in this way, in which the connection don't follow the arrow of time, so left, right, is just an abstract input output, it's not the arrow of time. Let me call this theory non-causal. Okay. Now, if you have a causal theory, normalized states are a plane, are a base of the convex cone of non-normalized states. Shortly speaking, the normalization is just a multiplication of the state by a positive number. And in terms of effects, you have a unique deterministic effect. Let's define, call it E, which gives the normalization of all possible states and the normalization of observation tests. The sum of the effects is equal to the deterministic effect. What is very interesting is that if you go to a non-causal theory, then there is not a unique deterministic effect. There are many deterministic effects. And the normalized states are no longer a basis for the cone. The normalization is not just a multiplication by a constant. So if you want to move to a non-causal framework, which I think that is useful for quantum gravity, I'm saying, I think that Lucien has this in mind, you have to pay the huge price that the normalization is not just a multiplication. Oh, you want to understand why? Then it takes time. You have to see the whole structure. No, I cannot tell in a minute. I'm not prepared to do that. But we can discuss. No, I'm just saying the end of the story here. If you know our comp theory, then you can see there. It's like to have the comb. The quantum comb is described by a Choi-Jamolkowski operator, which instead of being normalized in the usual way by partial trace, blah, blah, is equal to the identity is given. So it's like to have a POVM, which instead of having the sum of all elements equal to the identity, the sum of all elements is equal to a positive operator itself. And then this different, the different positive operator will give a different deterministic effect. It's something that I'm saying, if you want to see why we need to work, you need to work out the old formula if it's not. Now, we have the notion of marginal state. This is the notion of a partial trace in quantum mechanics. You take the joint probability rule for all possible systems. You run just the identity everywhere apart from the N system. And this is a probability rule for local transformation. So this will be the marginal state for system N, which in terms of effects is just you put the effect corresponding to transformation here. And everywhere else, you put the deterministic effect. And this is actually the non-signaling, because the deterministic effect corresponds to run a full test. And so the probability of having A is independent on which test you run, because the deterministic effect is only, there is only one deterministic effect, right? There are not many. Okay, now this is very easily represented in this diagrammatic form. So the partial trace is what? You put the deterministic effect on system one, and you take the part, this is the partial trace on one, and you take the marginal state on two. Now, addition of transformation is just the coarse graining. The coarse graining is what? Usually you do the coarse graining within the same test. You have to think about, you have two transformations, one in one test and one in the other test. You have to imagine them as belonging to the same test, and then you take the coarse graining. What gives the coarse graining is just in terms of the two equivalence classes that are the probabilistic one and the conditioning one, just gives this rule. The coarse graining of the two events, A1 and A2, is just the sum of the transformation. This is, you can work, you see immediately. Okay, so we have defined the sum of the transformation. We can define the multiplication by a constant, which is just the same transformation from the point of view of conditioning, but occurring with a rescaled probability. Oh, God. Oh, that's a very, sorry. Oh, I got the last transparency. Sorry. Okay, where is it? Oh. By the way, I forgot to tell you about this figure. I didn't say what is this figure. Too many things to say. This is a PR box. I didn't say that. Sorry. It's good that I made this mistake, because I forgot to tell you. You were asking, what is this strange figure? So this is the PR box. This is the cone of effects. And this is the convex set of effects. This is the convex set of states. We are representing states and effects in the same Euclidean space. And this is the deterministic effect here, which is in coincidence with the totally chaotic state. Okay? And so this, you see, this is the shape for convex set, which is very different from this one. If you have non-causal theories, the set of states will be something like that instead of something like that within the cone of states. Okay, just, sorry for, okay, now, okay, yes. Okay, now, we can rescale and we can sum. So the transformation become a convex cone. We have a convex cone of transformation. And we call atomic the transformation that cannot be written, cannot be refined, unrefinable, right? Cannot be written as a sum. Actually, let's use this word atomic for everything. So pure state are atomic, and everything which is atomic cannot be refined. And they are what? They are the extremal rays. They are points over the extremal rays of the cone. It cannot be refined means that, to be as extremal in the cone. I don't know why I was so stupid for, at the beginning, for years, I thought, you know, the identity transformation cannot be refined. How can you refine something which is already the identity? That's not true. You can refine the identity. In the classical probabilistic theory, identity is refinable, and this is actually why you can perform a measurement, take information without making any disturbance. So this is a crucial point. Identity generally is refinable. So starting from the convex sets, we can take the linear span of the convex set. I think we can define the space, the linear space of a real, of the real field, of the transformation states and effects. And with the transformation, you can also perform multiplication, so they become a matrix, a real matrix algebra, over the linear space of states, or if you want, transposed over the linear space of effects. And this matrix algebra, we can even really give a representation with a physical meaning, because we just consider this is like your Bureau of Standards, a test, which is a collection of transformations, which prepare a set of state which is separating, namely, that is by means of this state you can discriminate any two effects, and is minimal, and occur with probability given by an effect, and the set of effects is an infocomplete, so a separating set of effects, which is minimal. So this is a kind of basis. It's a choice of basis with a physical meaning. Actually, it's convenient to take a linear transformation and to move to an unphysical basis in which you have this bi-orthogonal putting both effects and states in the same Euclidean space. When you have this bi-orthogonality, and even more convenient, take one of the elements of the effects as the deterministic one, like, for example, the last one, and correspondingly for states, this will be the axis of the cone. And then, in this way, you get a very nice matrix representation. So the transformation is a linear matrix over the cone. And if you want to regard the transformation over the convex set, it will be just a submatrix, and it will be an affine transformation over the convex set, multiplication by this submatrix, translation by this vector, and then you renormalize by, overall will be a fractional affine transformation. You normalize by the probability. So this corresponds to what is called it's a kind of pinhole projection, perspective function. It's called as a pinhole projection through the vertex of the cone. And here, this vector is the effect. This is the effect. So you have this very general mathematical formulation. You can write everything in terms of this linear formulation, as long as the theory is causal. Otherwise, it becomes much more complicated. And I still have not analyzed what is the general mathematical structure. Big thing is the local discriminability. Running out of time so fast. So local discriminability, we already know. Oh, we can distinguish two states, joint states, by local effects. Certainly, we think that all possible joint preparation, local preparation, can be done. So this means that the joint states will include all local preparation. And this is not true for the quaternionic quantum mechanics, as discovered yesterday. Means the quaternionic quantum mechanics is completely odd. But now, if you can also discriminate by local effects, joint states, this means that you have the equal here, not the subset in the tensor problem. So the linear space of states, of joint states, will be the tensor problem. Okay, and we know that an example of theory that doesn't satisfy this is the real quantum mechanics. I think this principle is extremely important because it, what I say is that it reconciles holism with reductionism, in the sense that you have a holistic reality that you, or nature, whatever, that you are experimenting by local stuff. It's a huge reduction in experimental complexity. If it doesn't work, you are dead, because when you go to three systems, you need to build a new machine. When you go to four systems, you need to build a new machine. So this is a crucial postulate. This is the only one that probably we don't want to give up. Maybe causality we can, but this one would be horrible. We cannot do science without.
I'm sorry.
No, but in your case, you have you recovered from another side, no?
Yeah.
Okay, it would be a good argument. Actually, I would love a reason to give it up. I won't. Because you have to build up a new machine all the time. If you want to have joint information about four systems, you need a four system machine. It's a big mess, a lot of work. You don't need four machines, but a new. Yeah, but you have an exponential increase in complexity. I don't know. Anyway, if this local discriminability holds, then joint states and joint effects have matrix representation. Okay, that's obvious. Now, what is a faithful state? A state we call a bipartite state faithful dynamically. If you apply a transformation locally on one system, the output state, when I say state, I don't mean it's normalized, it's generally not normalized, is in one-to-one correspondence with the transformation. So this is a kind of linear, is a linear map, which is one-to-one between between states and transformations. And I say that the state is preparationally faithful if I can prepare all joint states by a suitable transformation. Now, this linear map becomes also surjective over the cones of states. So this map is actually, if you have both, is an isomorphism between the cone of joint states and the cone of transformations. The fact that the linear map is invertible doesn't mean it's an isomorphism of the cones. It cannot be surjective. Now, it is easy to prove that if you are in finite dimension, a symmetric preparationally faithful state is also dynamically faithful. So the most important feature is to be preparationally faithful in finite dimension. And another thing is that actually it's not a big deal to have this such a faithful state, because as long as the theory is weakly self-dual, namely the convex cone of effects and the convex cone of states are isomorphic, but they are not the same. They don't coincide when you embed them in the same Euclidean space by keeping the scalar product invariant. Now, this is what Alice was saying. So as long as it weakly self-dual, all the theories that we mentioned, like, for example, real Hilbert space quantum mechanics, PR boxes, are all weakly self-dual, then you can easily add some transformation and make the state preparationally faithful. So it's very easy to have. What is difficult is to have the state not only preparationally faithful, but also pure. And this is actually a very intriguing thing, because there is a one-to-one correspondence between the fact that the identity is atomic and the preparationally faithful state is pure. So the preparationally faithful state is pure if and only if the identity is atomic. This is actually what I call a non-local feature coming from a local one, non-locality coming from locality, in the sense that if you take a theory like classical probabilistic theory, there is no way, starting from the local one, to build up a non-local, whichever is your generalization to two systems of your theory, in such a way that you have a faithful state, preparation of a faithful state, which is also pure. No way. And there are other features which come from the local theory. Like, for example, there is a paper by Walt and somebody else recently posted on the web, which they show that whichever is the operational theory, if you want to violate the Clausen or Simony inequality, then you need locally, you need incompatible tests. And this is a not if and only if. And there are many other non-local features which come from the local, the shape of the cone, from the shape of the cone. And that's the end of this short lecture. And so we are middle of the talk. I think that we learned at least one nice thing is that if the theory is causal and obeys local discriminability, everything can be written in terms of a matrix representation. So we have this kind of linear structure, which is general for all these theories. Now, let's explore the principles. First postulate, existence of a pure faithful state, which is preparationally faithful. This is the point, that is pure. So there is one preparation. By one preparation, you can prepare all possible joint states by local transformation. So this is a huge reduction of complexity in calibrability and preparability. You can prepare everything, but you can also calibrate the transformation because it is one-to-one correspondence with the state. Because we prove that if a preparation is faithful, in finite dimension is also dynamically faithful. Oh, God. I'm sorry, but I don't know why it goes to the end of the talk all the time. Where is it? Sorry for that. Oh, God. I don't understand. I'm pressing a button. Okay. Let's see. Okay. So another consequence is that... Yes.
So when you say bijective correspondence, do you mean that it is a mathematical bijection of some kind, or a physical one, which is physically can realize?
It's physical.
So that I think is exactly the same as having the same.
Yes, exactly the same. I agree. There is a huge connection between this, Lucien, and yours, I think. I will spend some time trying to unify and have a common language. We are really close. Another consequence, this is trivial, just you have an isomorphism between the cone, this is the definition almost, an isomorphism between the cone of joint states and the cone of transformation. And another consequence is that the theory is a weakly self-dual, and the isomorphism between effects and states, the two cones, is given just by this map. And another thing is that the space of transformation is complete in the sense that the real linear space of transformation is the full matrix algebra over effects. And the identity transformation is atomic. So we are excluding classical mechanics because we ask the states to be pure. So quantum, I don't want to go to the end. Classical mechanics is excluded. And there are many other consequences, like, for example, you can build up a scalar product. I cannot spend much time on that, but I can tell you later. We can define a transposition in the sense that if we have system one and system two, they are the same system, they are identical system, then a transformation of system one gives the same result of the transpose transformation of system two. The marginal state of the preparationally faithful state is actually more than in just internal and is invariant under transpose deterministic test. It's actually the maximally chaotic state. And so all these consequences, calibrability, weak self-duality. But we are not yet at, we don't have quantum mechanics. We have a general theory. It's non-classical. We want to get rid, for example, of PR boxes. Then we can think that if you take the inverse of the matrix of the faithful state, this works as an effect. but maybe it is a non-physical effect. We postulate it's physical. Then we have this postulate, we call this faithful effect. So this means that just that the inverse isomorphism, which is this one between the cone of effects and the cone of state, is physical. So this is a physical effect. And this is equivalent to probabilistic teleportation. So you see, it's exactly your. And now we can get rid of the PR boxes because they don't have teleportation, not even probabilistic. The problem is that we want to have more because we are working only with one and two systems. We want to go to any number of systems. So why don't we take two faithful states, then take a joint effect here? What we get is a new bipartite state. Oh, that's nice. So this is a map between bipartite effects and bipartite states. Maybe it's an isomorphism? No. Because this map, unbelievably, is invertible, linear, invertible. It gives, for every separable effects, it gives separable states. All possible separable states come from separable effects. All non-separable effects go to non-separable states, but they may exist non-separable states that don't come from separable states. So it's just, oh God. For a little thing, it's not an isomorphism. So what we want a super faithful state, more, that if we put together two faithful states in this way, then we get a faithful state for bipartite and bipartite. And then we can build up a full, like, you know, David Deutsch. we can do all possible transformation by local stuff, you know, like a big quantum computer. Super faithful, if you postulate a super faithful state, then you get preparationally faithful and faithful effects. These are the consequences. Now, let's go to the last big improvement, which is the postulate purification. The postulate is just that every state has a purification. What does it mean, purification? It means that there is exists another system, let's call this B, such that there is a joint pure state, such that if you take the marginal state, so take the deterministic effect over the purifying system, the marginal state is the state that you want. You purify. And the purification is unique, clearly, modulo, local, invertible transformations. This is the point, invertible transformation on the other system. Clearly, if you make a transformation on the other system, that this doesn't change the state on your original system because there is no signaling, right? You can make this postulate stronger and ask that there exists a system which purifies all states, and there exists a system which such that the purification, the system purifying the purifying system is back the original system. And the system purifying the bipartite system is the bipartite of the purifying system. So this is the strong version of the postulate. Now, there is an amazing number of consequences of this postulate. I was astonished. So there is a paper just posted on the web with Giulio and Paolo, the power of this young guy. I'm getting old, and so they are so fast improving. I couldn't follow what they were. I'm saying there are 34 pages, two columns on PRA, two PRA columns, 34 pages on web, posted on the web, all consequences. Here I'm just putting some of them. First, you can. This was a point that I strongly motivated because this was the original postulate. I didn't like it. But you can prove, this is not easy, that once you can purify one state, you can purify a full ensemble of states in the following sense, is that the collection, the ensemble of states, which is a test, can be obtained by just one single pure state, the same, and then you run an observation test over the purifying system. This is very strong. It's very strong because it gives a lot of other things. There is, okay, no discriminability of pure states, which is equivalent to no cloning. Then, no information without disturbance. It's interesting to see the proof of that. Then, existence of pure bipartite states which have perfect correlation, like APR states. Then, impossibility of bit commitment. Then, no programming theorem. You cannot program a transformation over the state of an ancilla, the Nissan Chang theorem. Dilation, this is the most important one, dilation of tests and channels to a reversible interaction with an environment means the following. So this is your transformation, which is generally not reversible and probabilistic. You can obtain this by a reversible transformation with two additional systems, preparing a state here which is pure, is irrelevant, which state is that. And then here, you perform a test locally, which actually you can take it a perfectly discriminable test. This one. And then you also take a partial trace. So this is a, in some way the operational version of the Ozawa theorem that every instrument can be dilated to an indirect von Neumann measurement. And then, so you can, for example, more, as a special case, you can make an inversible, non-reversible channel as in terms of a, you can achieve it as a unitary, as not a unitary, as a reversible transformation over with an ancilla. Then you have, this is astonishing, because, you know, this is making a lot of trouble to me now, because I'm changing the proof of this theorem since 10 years. You know, this is a crucial theorem in error correction theory, that you say that a map is correctable upon input row, which in the operational case, upon input row means for all possible refinements of row, means that every possible state such that row can be obtained as a convex combination with. So to a map is invertible upon input row if and only if the reference and the environment remain uncorrelated. So I had originally mathematical proof of this, which were pretty long, coming from the Nielsen Chang. Then I have a much easier proof without using entropy and strange things that have nothing to do with this theorem. And then I came out with a pretty nice proof. Say, oh, that's nice. Very short, one page, and now we have an operational proof, which has nothing to do with quantum mechanics. It's true. It's true just because of purification. So just to give, this is the theorem. So the environment is the ancilla purifying the reversible map. The reference is the system purifying the state. And so if you, this is what? Now you take the state of the environment and the state of the reference, and they are factorized. And this is the if and only if condition for correctability. So everything is quantum mechanics, like this one. Causal channels are channels with memory. Means that causal channels are the channels that if you take partial trace here, you get this. Means that this output cannot come from this input, but only from this input. And this causal channel is equivalent to a memory channel. This is another quantum thing, pretty important, and it is implied by purification. You have probabilistic teleportation. If you take the strong version of the purification postulate, you get deterministic teleportation with probability one, with all, I think it's the same there. And clearly, this comes for free. You are proving the super faithful from purification. So you have everything. But the most important thing, oh, okay, I don't know, but we don't have the time. This is just the style of the proof. There is no mathematics. So this is, yeah, I'm saying just the definition. the definition of things is just a pure reasoning, and then I follow the definition. There is not a single algebraic structure, sum, product, group, nothing. Just reasoning. Yeah, yeah, I know that. I say, in some way, category theory is the mathematics of pure reasoning, right? It's the meta. It's a meta mathematics.
No, but here it's really the algebraic structure. It's really an algebraic structure about which you know that, again, equivalently, not even equivalently,
yes,
exactly as algebraically. Whatever you prove here is a solid proof.
Yes. I agree. Yes. But you can sell to normal people saying that there is no mathematics. No, I totally agree with you. There are people that don't like mathematics. Anyway, I don't think you want to see the details of the proof. This is the proof that of the if and only if condition for error correction. So it's just the equivalence of sorry, here there is proof. I don't think we have time. It's just the equivalence of drawing of this this very powerful language. Like, for example, this is just to give an idea. So this is what? This is the marginal state of this. So if I take this off, I will get the purification of this state. So the purification of this state. But there is a very simple theorem that says the purification of a pure state is just the tensor product of two pure states. So this is equal to this. And you reason in this way all the time. Now I am in trouble because I want to teach quantum mechanics in a different way. I want to use this language to teach quantum. It's much better because we understand things without mathematics. I'm sorry. So what is important about this special dilation consequence is that it is not just a consequence. This is an if and only if. So this is actually equivalent to the purification postulate. So we can rephrase the purification postulate in terms of the dilation. And the problem is that I want to have a postulate which I can tell to my wife. So I'm discovering why quantum mechanics. I can say, oh, purification, what does it mean? What is that? I try to rephrase the postulate in a human way, and I want your help because this is something that, you know, it's, maybe it's not the right way. You have a better idea. Can I call this conservation of information in the sense that every irreversible process arises from, which is not true, because let me say, this implies the postulate. It's not equivalent to the postulate. The fact that I can purify doesn't mean that there is really an environment. This is an additional assumption. But if I assume that, then I will imply the purification. So every irreversible process arises from a reversible interaction with an environment that is eventually lost. So information cannot be erased. It can only be discarded. I was saying to Chris that Charlie Bennett would love that, right?
It looks like you're on a slippery slope.
Everettian is, but yeah, it's true. It's very Everett, right?
Maybe I'll do something.
Yes, you will give me later.
Yes.
Good, I need it. I am really falling. So, these are the principles of the quantumness. Let me summarize: causality, local observability, conservation of information. Clearly, starting from a framework which is this test theory framework. I'm pretty sure this is quantum mechanics. I have not a proof yet, but I am pretty sure because we don't have a single counterexample. We have a lot of theorems that are quantum, and I have in mind an outline for a proof. We may need to give an additional specification on this purification, maybe about continuity, but continuity can come for free for other reasons. For example, some continuity is already implicit in the convex combination, right? So I think that is quantum mechanics, but not proved yet. Now, if we want to prove it, I can tell you there are, this is a difficult task. Usually it's difficult. One way is to derive a composition for effects. Composition for effects is completely meaningless operationally because effects are equivalent class of transformation that occur with the same probability. But the multiplication of effects has no meaning. So one way of deriving a composition of effects that I did in the past is to use this is a mathematical, it's not an operational principle. Choi-Jabotinsky isomorphism is the isomorphism between the cone of transformations and the cone of bilinear functionals over effects. Then you, in this way you can identify effects with atomic transformation, and if you assume atomicity of composition, by multiplying transformation, atomic transformation, you get the multiplication of effects. And then you are done, it's quantum mechanics. Another way, which was suggested to me by our friend, Rao. What is your first name? I'm still learning.
Jochen.
It's hard for me to, Jochen. Is that, this is the way I have in mind, is that we can prove that the group of automorphism of the system is SUD. If you prove that, then you are done. And maybe I can tell you more about this way. Anyway, it's pretty late. Futures. Yeah, first thing to do is to prove that this is quantum mechanics. If it's not quantum mechanics, it would be even better. If it's quantum mechanics, then one says, oh, what a pity. We have 34 pages of theorems that are trivial. That's not true, because these theorems are a completely new way of proving things. And actually, I love that. So every outcome is good for me. I will win. It's a win-win. So the second thing is, this is very intriguing, to derive the mathematical structure for the non-causal theory, which would be interesting for application to quantum gravity with all these different effects. And then we have this other thing. We never consider the notion of subsystem. This is important. For example, this is present in Lucien's work. And the theory of state compression. Just very shortly, I can tell you that essentially in the convex framework, the subsystem comes as a phase of the convex set. And the notion of state compression, we generalize the notion of information compression, is just that if you take many copies of the same system, a multipartite system, n copies, you take rho tensor n, the state rho tensor n, you have an asymptotic behavior that with increasing n, rho tensor n will become closer and closer to the surface of the convex set, and it will touch a face. This face will correspond to a lower number of component systems, and the ratio between this number and the original number of systems is the compression. So in this way you can define, for example, as a compression factor, the von Neumann entropy, no, of the probability theory. So thank you very much for your attention. This is the end.
Thanks, this is very inspiring. I'm thinking about this continuity assumption, right? So, as you said, if you want to reconstruct proof that this is quantum mechanics, showing that reversible transformations are isomorphic to SUD requires some continuity assumption because SUD is.
I'm not sure.
So my question is, do you feel that your purified, like your transformations postulated in these possibly purified, can already contain enough continuity assumption in them, or you actually are going to add stuff, to add a continuity assumption?
I think we I don't need to add a continuity assumption, but I'm saying because of the following reason. Okay, I didn't prove a bound between the distance of original states and the distance between purification. Or the distance, you just take the natural distance over the convex set, which is the supremum of all possible functionals. So it's the, like the trace norm distance of states. It's a, there is a distance for states, every possible theory, whichever. The most general distance is the convex set. You take all functionals bounded by positive functionals bounded by one, and then you take the functional, which gives the maximum value over the difference of two states, and this is the distance. You can prove that this is a metric and so on. I couldn't, I was not able yet to bound, you know, bounding is usually a difficult thing. I was not able to bound this distance with the purification, because you have to find the closest purification. You have to minimize over all possible reversible transformations, no, on the other system. But, you know, everything is compact. We are in finite dimension. It's easy to prove that if you take the limit, this is possible to prove, that if you take the limit of the purification, oh, sorry, the limit of the state gives the limit of the purification without saying, just the limit is the same. I cannot bound, I can prove the limit. I am not able yet to bound the distances to show that there is a bound between. But it must be. And the continuity comes from, ultimately, from the convex combination. It's, yeah, it's something that you have to see. But you, you don't need to postulate, because, you know, you have the freedom of optimizing over all possible local transformation on the other system. How can it be that you get you don't get close to the original one? And that, and it's unique. The purification is unique. So it is very likely. No, the problem that I have is different. In, so improving this, if I want to prove it your way, is your home way, is I need the, so one idea is the following, is that the joint states are like a fiber. I don't like these mathematical words, but you know, it's easy. In this case, it's useful. It's a fiber bundle, which the basis is the set of states of one system. And the fiber is the set of automorphisms. So I can immediately found the dimension of the joint states is the product of the two, right? The problem is that I need another identity between dimensions for the discriminable states. So I know that I can dilate. I have a Neimark theorem. I didn't say that. It's obvious. I have a Neimark theorem. But what I cannot tell is that I can get a Neimark dilation of an informationally complete measurement on a system which is the same system. The purifying system is the same. If I have that, then I have a V squared, and I have just to tell that the automorphism group is the group of matrices, because the only possible continuity is important. Oh, there is another theorem. We have the automorphism group is a Lie group. We didn't prove it's continuous, but it's a Lie group. So we know that it's Lie. If it's continuous, then it's a continuous Lie group of dimension d squared, then it's associative. So that's a way to prove it. There are still some thing missing, but very close to being proved.
Yeah, just I think you mentioned it already, but regarding continuity, could it be that continuity is implicit in your assumption that you allow arbitrary linear combinations of arbitrary
linear? Yes. Okay. So another thing I didn't say is that we try to prove all possible theorems without the assumption, even the assumption of convexity, of closure for convex combination. And we need to assume, for example, the existence of one state, internal state, things like that. Because we wanted to fit also Rob Sessions framework. We want to have all things together. It's very hard. I think that in this case, then you are in trouble, because you really lose every continuity and you may be in trouble. So you can have purification, but can be a discrete set of states, right? But the purification is there, and the automorphism group is there, and all these things can be there, but it's not continuous. But then you don't get quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics is convex.
One is, I'm sure you're getting a distance. I think you, the triangle inequality, you don't have a triangle inequality.
No, this is actually, it's not, I didn't invent it. This is an old thing coming from Stürmer or whatever, Ludwig School. It's just, we have a convex set, you take the linear functional, positive linear functional. You have 2 points. You take the maximum positive linear functional bounded by one. And what happens is that, what is the definition of orthogonality? It, they are the antipodal. Antipodality is orthogonality.
Yeah.
No, it's impossible. It's a well-known theorem. I didn't prove that. I proved myself, but it's a well-known. Yes.
The second one is about the non-causality and the structure for non-causality. I think if you just give up the interpretation of these schemes as a time derivative, you see that the structure for non-causality is exactly the same as the one for causality. So the only thing you have to do is not to interpret those lines as time derivative. Because you can interpret all these structures like a combination of information. So you don't have to interpret it as a state, as a transformation on a state or something, I mean state, but get some information. If you add some information, you get a new information, which can be about a system, about a map, about something which is atemporal or something like that. So exactly the same structure, and also the normalization you can have for a non-causal field. So it's because you are putting the time interpreting these relations temporally, which you have this
the normalization is lost.
I can show you something because
it happens in quantum mechanics. In quantum mechanics, if you consider this connection between two circuits, the normalization is lost.
Yeah, because in quantum mechanics you have the time element, time interpretation of a sequence. If you just give up the structure is so general that you can't really speak about atemporal things or culturally unrelated things, but we can speak about the
thing. You know, you have, what is the difference between states and effects? It is sufficient to say that since effects are not a truncated cone with a basis, then you must be able to exchange effects with states, right? Like in Aronoff theory. And you immediately see that the convex set of effects is very different, because it's like a double pyramid, a double cone. You are losing this base for the cone.
If you look at it, just looking at your probability patterns, you see that all of these elements just correspond to proposition. You just if you look at this pattern,
preparation and observation are exchanged.
You have a different role you for have a outcomes for preparation, but not for preparation states of measurements. You can interpret a transformation as a just the addition of information.
Oh, sure. The transformation concept is lost.
So there
is no transformation.
They are interchangeable. So if you see that, you see, not going to the diagram, but that looking, when you work with probabilities, you can suddenly, you have exactly the same role. The propositions we represent a preparation, the proposition we represent a transformation. It's just an interpretation. Similar to there, you see that they are exactly.
Because you are talking about propositions.
Exactly.
But if you talk about effects, more generally, if you take...
No, the effect is the so you speaking more generally, if you just speak about proposition. If you speak about effect and measurement, then you are generalized. There are you losing your generality. It's not in the structure, it's in your interpretation of the structure. But mathematics is exactly the same. That's one. But we can...
Right answer. And then Eric Wilson,
speculatively had an active delivery state with the margin order, but to correlate by tripartite state, which seems to resonate very well with your purified axioms. So I guess his other axioms are all about proofs, contact proofs, transformation. So I guess that's another alternative way of trying to at least to self-fuel the model in the curve.
Yeah, I'm saying, if you say that a state is a marginal of a pure state, then it's purification. If state that is a marginal of a, not of a pure state, but of a state that is, in, what is the name that is?
Ah, perfectly correlated
state. Perfectly correlated state. I'm not sure the state is pure. That's what can be the difference. If the state is not pure, then you lose a lot. The purity of this, the, for example, for the faithful state, if you take just any state, then you have all possible theories, they fit. But if it's pure, then you, for example, you cancel classical mechanics. The purity is crucial. I don't know. I think there is a big relation with this frame, with this postulate. But I don't remember if it's pure.
So yeah, you may have mentioned before about that you also would like to have better story theory. That I mean, most of those in the distinction between being starting from complex structures, it's clearly because you never want to sort of like a beast and then pure structure. Now, one of the nice things about this language is that if you have anything which considers pure structure, which might have stops and gaps into your own sort of work, you know, and show in this theory, then within this structure internally, you can actually define some mixed states and operations over that, and all the structure is completely inherited. So you end up with the same beast that you started with, which again has the same as a corresponding graphical language. You have some additional structure coming from the fact that it arises from construction. And actually, so this construction used to be the subject from a long time ago, 2005, we know.
Yeah.
So a year later, I wrote a paper about it, and if you want to look at it, at these two, are they related? That's exactly what you say in the context of behavior of the purification. Now, exactly the same story which I'm telling now applies to your spectrum story theory. You get the version I gave on slide, that you fuse it from the story theory, which is not in its way, it's just different. You apply this same construction to the subject, you get the mixed state version, connection between them is purification.
I like that.
So this whole story does apply to as well, this sort of things as mixed state quantum mechanics in the more sort of complex sense.
This is exactly what I want.
So it works, it works. So
can you show that there are two great kinds of classes answer? So you have N is N A and
B. Or information.
Can you show that
additivity of a channel?
The composite system, sorry, just for the composite system that that the number of simple states we have N A B.
Ah, the power two?
No, just if I have dice moving and I have two times, so I can have six.
If I know how many distinguishable states I have in one system and how many distinguishable states I have in the other system, clearly this is a tautology that is the product of the two. No, wait a minute. If they are independent systems, I take the local propagation.
Okay,
the local propagation are clearly discriminable, and they are. Maybe there are additional ones. Okay, but wait a minute. But. So, but if you have a local discriminability theory, this cannot happen. If it's without local discriminability, maybe. But.
When you take the composites, some things that weren't distinguishable, when you take separable measures, become distinguishable in the local measures. And that would be
I've not thought about it, but you know, you can have these very strange features if you have non-local disseminability, like that even two local effects that looks the same, that give the same probability for all possible local states, then you go to joint states, and they give a joint probability, not a marginal one, a joint probability which is different. You can have this situation. But this is for a theory which doesn't satisfy the local discriminability principle.
At least I try to prove the local discrimination implies
the information that is the other thing. So you say that there may be a joint state which is jointly discriminable.
Yeah, so exactly. With you have something like two level systems, something like two digits. So you bring the problem of the physical spaces four, but it could be five, it could be an extra one. But only the real itself would be allowed something like the panel measurement.
Yes.
So then there's no reason why that attack, there's no obvious reason why that attack would violate.
We can think about. I didn't address this problem in this way specifically. That's interesting.
And then the other question is, can you improve something like systems that have the same number of distinguishable states have the same properties?
Sorry?
Systems that have the same number of distinguishable states have the same properties?
No, I didn't do that. Yeah, actually, I never worked on subsystems. I think this is related to the subsystem.
Is local discriminability the same thing that we've seen applying to global tomography here? Okay. Is it obvious why it fails for rebits?
Very simple. Local states cones for real Hilbert space dimension 3. 3 by 3 is 9. If you take an Hilbert space of dimension 4, which is the tensor product of two Hilbert space of dimension 2, real, you get dimension 10. So you have an additional dimension. So you have an additional joint state, which comes up from the blue. No? Is it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can think of, if you want to think about qubits or rebits, mm-hmm. the sigma y. The Cali operator, sigma y, tensor sigma y, is a real.
Is a real, yes, yes, that's the point.
Even though sigma y itself is complex, and that means that if you have a piece of matter, you're
exactly
able to see that locally.
Y times y is real in the tensor product.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. You are saving me from falling.
And maybe make this go on. Unless there's something earlier. Am I wrong in thinking that the positive view, putting it at the very end, the information conservation positive, am I wrong in thinking that that is a step for many worlds of interpretation? When I first met you, you were violently
angry. Yes, yes.
And you very much wanted to do quantum states in epistemic terms. And so I could well be wrong that the conservation information that you were proposing is still in epistemic terms, and I haven't quite understood that yet. So can you comment?
Yeah, actually, please save me, because I don't like many words, but it is really, I can see there, I'm falling. Yes. You know, I changed my mind many things. I was a strongly objectivistic person. Then I met you. And I was strongly against many words. No, I'm not seriously... Yeah, I don't know. Can we say something more subtle than just conservation of information? The fact that it's a matter of control more than... So, I don't know, maybe I have a wrong point of view. For me, information is a notion in which you need to define the boundary, which is the famous infamous boundary. There is a title of a book which is infamous boundary. The boundary with the observer and the observed. Information is only of the observer. So when I say that information is not lost, I'm saying something wrong. Because I have, you know, I am again coming back to the situation in which there is no observer. So is a, I think this this is not really a serious statement of the theory, of the postulate. It's a popularizing, is a way of popularizing the postulate more than. But if you take it more seriously, it is dangerous. It is dangerous. Because information is human. And I believe that if you have an experimental science, there is an operator which prepares the act. When Bell was laughing, you know, say, oh, what is the difference? No, you know, this famous paper against the measurement. What is the difference between a measurement and the pre-evolution? This is crackpot, it's stupid. But the difference is that there is somebody who prepares the measuring apparatus and knows the preparation of the apparatus. And then from this knowledge, the measurement comes out. It's not just free evolution. There is knowledge coming from knowledge. So I strongly believe we need to divide into two parts, observer and observed. And this is experimental science, not just ideology, metaphysics. So I am strongly against the objective science in the sense that we can do science without the man. And so this information that is not lost is just a way of saying, you know.
I know Alexei has a similar concept. Maybe we can take a short break in the interest of being strict on schedule. We should